South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanz in Washington, working on this program very much. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Monday, May 2nd, 2022. Families of activists jailed in Sudan are calling on military rulers to release their loved ones.
She says, "We saw his name on the list of prisoners and we continue to take food and clothes for him. But they never allowed us to see him."
And health experts in South Sudan confirm an outbreak of three diseases.
We have a measles outbreak and rubella, and we have anthrax.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Families of detained members of the Resistance Committee are calling on the Sudanese authorities to release their loved ones who have been behind the bars for months without charges. Some families say they are unable to celebrate the Muslim Eid al-Fitr today while their beloved family members are in prison. Some Sudanese human rights activists also called on the government to release detainees or charge them in the court of law. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Khartoum.
Resistance committees are informal grassroots neighborhood networks of Sudanese residents that began organizing civil disobedience campaigns against the government of Omar al-Bashir in 2013 and played a key role during the Sudanese revolution. Zahra Abdul Wahab's 19-year-old son, Muhammad Mustafa, has been held in the Soba prison in Khartoum for more than a month. Abdul Wahab says she is unable to celebrate Eid because her son is in pain. She says Mustafa was arrested by security officers on March 31st after taking part in the protest. She says the family has not been allowed to see or speak to him since. Abdul Wahab says she only knows his whereabouts because she saw his name on the list. She says, "We saw his name on the list of prisoners and we continue to take food and clothes for him. But they never allowed us to see him." Abdul Wahab says, "I tried to talk to them to allow me just to see him so I can be sure that he is safe and healthy, but they refused." Since the October military coup led by Army Commander Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, hundreds of pro-democracy activists and members of Resistance Committee have been arrested and detained. So far, none of them have been charged in a court of law. Yesterday, three female detainees were released from the Taibad Women's Prison after being held for nearly a month. No explanation was given for their arrest or release. 23-year-old Yasmin Muhammad Bashir, a member of the Fatihab Resistance Committee in Omdurman, was released last night. Speaking to this program, Bashir says on April 11th, when she was arrested, authorities never explained the reason for her arrest. She says she was never allowed to meet with their family, lawyers, or a doctor. Bashir says, "When they arrested me, they were rough with me and I was taken to a police station. There was no case opened against me. The following day at around 11 a.m., we were relocated to Taibad Women's Prison with other female colleagues without any proper legal procedures." Sudanese lawyer and human rights activist Abdul Hamid Ibrahim says Bashir's arrest violates international human rights law. Ibrahim says it is unlawful to detain anyone for more than 24 hours without charging them in a court of law.
This is an arbitrary detention which violates the law. Normally, when you arrest someone, within 24 hours, you need to bring a case against them, regardless of the charges. But in this case, we regard it as an arbitrary detention and it's politically motivated.
Nahed Jabrallah, who heads a local NGO, SEMA, which advocates for women's rights in Sudan, condemned the detention and said all detainees should be released or charged with an offense. She says pro-democracy activists in Sudan will not be deterred. Jabrallah says the resistance committee, families, and the entire Sudanese people are not afraid of these detention activities. She says they will continue to persist on the part of the struggle despite the aggression used against them. Both Ibrahim and Jabrallah are calling on Sudanese authorities to immediately release all the detainees or charge them in a court of law. Last week, a Sudanese court ordered the release of former Sudanese cabinet minister Khalid Omar Youssef and five other political detainees who were charged with different charges, including dishonesty. The presiding judge said there was not enough evidence to convict them. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
From Khartoum, we move to South Sudan, where the Director General of Preventive Health Services at the National Ministry of Health has confirmed outbreak of measles, rubella, and anthrax in Warab State. The Minister for Health in Warab State says samples sent to the National Laboratory in Juba all returned positive for the three diseases. Dengai Deng has more for VOA from Bor.
Warab State Minister of Health Abag Yel Madud says most samples collected from Kwai North, Kwai South and Akon Payams tested positive at the National Laboratory in Juba.
We have measles outbreak and rubella, and we have anthrax there too. We sent the samples and the result came out is outbreak. For the measles, yes, can be treated, can be. Well, the children can be taking the vaccination. For rubella, it doesn't have any vaccine. Still, we're still getting cases. We are telling the community, if there is any symptoms, they have to bring children to the hospital. And we are advising them to take them to the nearest facility to take the vaccine.
Madu says our ministry has held meetings with health partners in the area to discuss how to combat the outbreaks. The Director General of Preventive Health Services at the National Ministry of Health, Dr. John Romunu, says the National Ministry of Health has dispatched a rapid response team to the concerned areas.
Besides COVID-19, we are dealing with a number of outbreaks. We have measles and anthrax in Warab, measles in Western Bahr Ghazal. We have cholera in Unity State. We have meningitis in Northern Bahr Ghazal State. So we sent a rapid response team from the national level, joined by colleagues from WHO and ICAP, and also we have MSF on ground. They are doing case management. Our team, the rapid response team, is doing case search and improving surveillance and case management.
Dr. Romunu says the National Ministry of Health is doing its best to contain the outbreaks across the country.
We are using a multi-hazard approach for dealing with all these outbreaks through the Public Health Emergency Operation Center. With regards to the public, we always have targeted information, education, communication to different areas according to the hazard and according to the risk.
Dr. Romunu urges people in the affected communities to get vaccinated to help their ministry and its partners contain the outbreaks. Measles is a highly contagious disease caused by a virus. More than 140,000 people died from measles in 2018, mostly children under the age of 5, despite the availability of a safe and effective vaccine, according to World Health Organization. Rubella is a virus with a single stereotype that does not cross-react with other viruses. Humans are the only known host, with seasonal epidemics occurring every 5 to 9 years over a worldwide distribution. Rubella is transmitted by the respiratory route and replicates in the nose, throat, and the local lymph nodes. Rubella can infect the placenta and the developing fetus in pregnant women. The virus is characterized by a transient rash, joint pain, and arthritis. It rarely occurs in children, but may affect up to 70% of adults. Rubella can be found in nose and throat secretions and urine from 1 week before to 2 weeks after the onset of a rash. Anthrax is a serious infectious disease caused by gram-positive, rod-shaped bacteria known as Bacillus anthracis. It occurs naturally in soil and commonly affects domestic and wild animals around the world. People can get sick with anthrax if they come in contact with infected animals or contaminated animals products. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaiding in Bor.
Some residents of Juba's Gurei neighborhood say unknown land agents have demolished their houses in an ongoing land dispute. The residents are asking Central Equatoria State Government to investigate the land demolition in the capital, Juba. The governor of Central Equatoria State acknowledges there are increased cases of land grabbing, adding that the matter will be addressed. Sheila Pony reports for VOA from Juba.
Gisma Loro, a woman whose house was demolished in February, says she has lived here in Juba for 12 years. She says the State Ministry of Housing, Land and Public Utilities surveyed and demarcated the area in accordance with proper procedures. Loro says she was shocked to see unknown people come to the area and pave the way for demolitions.
Social survey was done, estate class, and our names has been taken to the Ministry of Housing and Public Utilities. And right now, we are waiting for them to process for us the documents. Suddenly, we just, from nowhere, commissioner just enter, talking to the people, and starting demolish the houses, and starting opening the roads. When we go back to the Ministry of Housing, we talk to them, because we don't know what's going on. Then we get a letter from Minister of Housing telling them to stop doing that.
Demolitions in the area began in February. Owners of the land sued the Commission of Juba County Charles Joseph Wani on the 25th of last month. The residents say the commissioner did not show up at the hearing on the 25th. John Sabadori Muhammadu, who has 9 children, is among the more than 500 people whose houses were demolished in Gurei North in February. Muhammadu says he has lived in the neighborhood for more than 15 years and was astonished to see his home demolished. He says not only is his family now homeless, but one of his children recently died and he has nowhere to bury the body.
I lost my child on 20th April this year. He died from natural death. Then I went to Payam. Please allow me to bury my child in my compound. Then they refused me categorically. In front of me, they denied my child to be buried in my compound.
Muhammadu says Payam authorities told him they were following the law but could not offer him a satisfactory explanation as to why he was refused permission to bury his child on a plot of land he says belongs to him. Muhammadu says he was advised to ask for a plot of land from a neighbor where he could bury his child and later exhume the body once he has regained control of the property.
He told me, please, how could you come to the riverbank whereby we receive a flood when it rains? How will you put that dead body here? Then the dead body immediately will poison the water because I don't have money. I could not even leave the dead body to rot. Then I placed my child on the riverbank. Then the following day, it rained heavily. Then the tomb was almost to be swept. I had also to ask my friends to assist me with a mere bag of cement plus aggregate so that I build that tomb.
Rita Dare is proprietor of City Dove Academy, a primary school in Gurei. She says she received a notification informing her that the school classrooms blocks will be demolished to make a way for new road amid the ongoing land dispute. Dare says if the school is demolished, more than 800 students will be stranded.
I'm not happy because I know we have a lot of children who are studying there, and when it's going to be destroyed. Where are our children going to go? And this is the future of the nation. And that's why we opened that school. For sure, if we destroy the schools, it means we are destroying the nation, because education is the key.
Dari says she met with the director of education in the Gure Boma and was offered a 2-month grace period to make arrangements to relocate the school. The Central Equatoria State Minister for Housing, Land and Public Utilities, Flora Gabler-Loro, tells South Sudan in Focus the area was surveyed and demarcated as a third-class residential area, and that the people behind the demolitions want the area demarcated as fourth-class area.
There is a group of people who are actually working against the demarcation or wanted the area to be demarcated as fourth class, and they have to do so many things with other people who are actually helping them. And to tell you the truth, that place is approved by the town planning of the ministry, and it was demarcated since 2011. But as people who work for the people here in Central Equatoria, we need the place to be maintained as third class, and the people there have to get it.
Central Equatoria Governor Emmanuel Adel Anthony acknowledges that the land grabs in the Juba area are on race. He says the national government has set up a committee to investigate such cases across the state.
I have launched the efforts of our president, General Salva Kiir Mayardi, for forming a high-level land committee to probe into the land grabbing malpractices in Juba City and the suburbs of Juba County. The main cause of land grabbing in Juba and suburbs of Juba County and Central Equatoria include, among others, the population explosion, which has increased pressure and demand on land for settlement and commercial purposes.
Muhammadu and others whose houses were demolished say they will continue to stand up for their rights until they regain ownership of their plots of land in Juba's Grays neighborhood. For VOA News, I am Sheila Aponi in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, tensions are rising high in the Tigray region. Find out why after the break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. The UN Refugee Agency says more than 3,000 refugees, asylum seekers, and migrants died or disappeared in dangerous sea journeys to Europe last year. That's more than double the number who died or disappeared in 2019. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Fresh data show refugees and migrant deaths are increasing at an alarming rate. More than 3,000 people died or went missing in the Mediterranean or Atlantic last year on attempts to reach Europe. In comparison, 1,439 people died or went missing on those routes in 2019 and about 1,800 in 2020. Since the beginning of this year, the UN Refugee Agency reports an additional 553 people also have died or gone missing while attempting to reach Europe. UNHCR spokeswoman Shabia Mantou says desperation is driving more people to make perilous sea journeys in search of protection and a better life.
Most of the sea crossings took place in packed, unseaworthy inflatable boats, many of which capsized or were deflated, leading to the loss of life. The sea journey from the West Africa coastal states, such as Senegal and Mauritania, to the Canary Islands is long and perilous and can take up to 10 days. Many boats drifted off course or otherwise went missing without trace in these waters.
Mantou says land routes also are highly dangerous. She says even more people have died on journeys through the Sahara Desert and remote border areas than on the sea. She says many people are subjected to horrific forms of abuse at the hands of smugglers or traffickers, armed and criminal gangs, and sometimes by law enforcement authorities.
Among the litany of abuses reported by people traveling these routes are extrajudicial killings, unlawful and arbitrary detention, sexual and gender-based violence, forced labor, slavery, forced marriage, and other gross human rights violations. UNHCR warns that continued political instability and conflicts, deteriorating socioeconomic conditions, as well as the impact of climate change may increase displacement and dangerous onward movements.
The UNHCR is calling for support to provide credible alternatives to the dangerous journeys. It is appealing for $163.5 million to provide increased humanitarian assistance and solutions for people who need international protection. The appeal covers some 25 countries in four regions. All are connected by the same land and sea routes used by migrants, asylum seekers, and refugees. The UNHCR aims to provide essential services and protection to people on the move or stranded en route, intercepted at sea, or held in detention. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Ethiopian federal authorities are dismissing a claim by Tigrayan rebels that their forces have pulled out of the neighboring Afar region. A spokesperson for the Tigray People's Liberation Front this week said the rebels had withdrawn their fighters so the federal government would allow much-needed aid to reach the Tigray region. For VOA News, Henry Wilkins reports.
4 days after the announcement by the TPLF that it had pulled its forces out of Afar, the federal government does not appear to be increasing the frequency of humanitarian convoys to Tigray, as some had hoped. Earlier today, the Ethiopian Ministry of Foreign Affairs gave a press briefing which stated TPLF forces have only withdrawn from a few areas of Eribti, Berehale, and Abala town, while maintaining control of the surrounding areas of Abala affecting the aid corridor. It is still in control of other wards of Afar and the Amhara region. The Afar Regional Communications Office did not respond to a request for comment. It has not yet been possible to verify if Tigrayan forces are still present in Afar. Johannes Abraham, a spokesperson for the TPLF, reiterated the claim to VOA that TPLF forces have pulled out of Afar.
The pullout was done per the previous plan to withdraw in a step-by-step fashion. Contrary to the false narrations, as usual, alluded by the Ethiopian regime and its subsidiaries in Afar and elsewhere. As we speak, there are no Tigrayan forces remained in Afar. Even if humanitarian delivery shouldn't be conditioned as you know it, presence of our forces in Afar is no more excuse for the regime to block delivery of humanitarian aid.
William Davison is an analyst for the Brussels-based International Crisis Group. He notes that the Ethiopian federal government had indicated the TPLF's pullout from Afar might result in more aid reaching Tigray.
Throughout the federal government's communication following its humanitarian truce announcement, it's made reference to the Tigray forces' presence in Amhara and Afar regions, almost suggesting that it's almost a condition for the increased delivery of aid for Tigray forces to vacate those areas. It seems that the conditions inside Tigray are absolutely desperate. And now we will see whether this actually leads to something approaching unrestricted humanitarian access.
Ethiopian analyst Kiram Tedesi points out, however, that even if the Ethiopian federal government gives the go-ahead for aid to enter Tigray, forces from the Afar and Amhara regions may still block them, as has happened in the past. The humanitarian need in Afar and Amhara is also at a crisis point, says Karam.
We should not be underestimating the potential challenge that could come from the Afar regional forces. Because like in Tigray, many people in Amhara and Afar regions are also in need of food aid, and there should be a certain way to deal with this deadlock regardless of the urgent need to respond to the situation in Tigray where access is a critical issue.
Combined, Tigray, Afar and Amhara have 9.4 million people who need humanitarian assistance, according to the UN, which also says the humanitarian situation in Tigray in particular is so desperate, people have been eating roots and flowers and plants instead of a normal steady meal. The deadlock continues. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Haik, Ethiopia.
From press freedom group Reporters Without Borders has put the websites of two major French broadcasters back online in Mali after the country's military government pulled the broadcasters off air in March and officially banned them from the Malian airwaves this week. Remsberg reports for VOA from Bamako.
Reporters Without Borders put the France 24 and Radio France International websites back online in Mali Thursday, creating mirrors of the sites that can be accessed in Mali and are updated in real time. Using a virtual private network had previously been the only way to access those websites in Mali, since the military government blocked them and took their corresponding TV and radio stations off the air March 17th. Arnaud Froger, head of the RSF Africa desk, says that the action is part of the organization's work toward media freedom. He says RSF has been getting banned media websites back online since 2015, so far having put 47 websites back online in 24 countries, most recently in Russia.
It's basically restoring your right to access to information that has been wrongfully denied by this censorship.
On Wednesday, France Media Monde, the parent company of RFI and France 24, said it was notified of the decision of Mali's High Communication Authority to definitively ban the two stations in the country. The High Communication Authority is the communication regulatory body in Mali, whose website says its primary mission is to protect freedom of information and communication and freedom of the press. RFI and France 24 were taken off the air in March after RFI reported on alleged human rights abuses by Mali's army around the town of Diabali. Mali's government said the report contained false allegations aimed at destabilizing the government. In late March, after the French broadcast ban, Human Rights Watch and several other media outlets reported on a Mali army operation in the town of Mora, in which witnesses said 300 civilians were killed. Tensions have been running high between the Malian and French governments. This month, France accused Russian mercenaries of staging a mass grave in Gossi, Mali, in order to blame it on French forces who had recently handed over a military base in Gossi to the Malian army. Mali's government then accused France of spying, but did not mention or refute the claim that Russian mercenaries are working with the Malian army. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
That's all we prepared for you this Monday. We now end this show with Simon Kero and the song Bambe Makemot.
Bambe makaimo moya garwa saki Bambe makaimo moya garwa saki Zaman motor zede mat turudumara Zaman matara zede mat turudumara Bambe makaimo moya hilo asaki Bambe makaimo moya hilo asaki Washini dunga mayan me pare Washini dunga mayan me pare Aparwe myajiro jini kusende na kwalio Aspire garanga yubana wawo wada Bambe makaimo moya garwa saki Sikiri adabu zede marana madairu
We have been listening to Simon Kero and the song Bambe Makemot. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Washini dunga mayan me pare Washini dunga mayan me pare ndeko Kandara kansa ginya kamu ni funga rufere. Kandara shara genia, kamu ni funga rufere. Bambe makaimo moya hilo asai.